Hello and welcome to the Right to Vulnerable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. My name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
My name's Jazza and last week on Wednesday I was preparing for a really quite lovely evening with a friend of mine. I was going to make some spaghetti bolognese, we were going to have a nice chill time, watch a little bit of anime, it was going to be great. And then Boris Johnson went and decided to ask the Queen if he could prorogue Parliament. She said yes, to be fair it's her job, it's fine. But then I had to go out, cancel all of these lovely plans, and go and protest outside of number 10. You know, somebody's got to be out there defending our democracy. I voted to remain, but I'm very tired. We like to meet...
every so often.
Every so often, thank you. Talk about current events, politics, and social issues. What are we talking about this week, Jimmy?
I mean, first of all, what anime were you planning on watching before your plans were derailed?
I can't remember the name of it now, but there's this ice skating, this gay ice skating anime that is getting very good reviews at the moment that's been recommended to me by several different people.
Did you just say gay ice skating
yes.
anime? Okay. Interesting. Is it good? Have you seen any of it?
I've still seen the first episode. I will continue to watch some of it.
Okay, but you buy into the premise.
I buy into the premise.
Yeah.
Gay, ice. I like both of those things.
Okay, is there any relationship between that and the, shenanigans that are going on in and around Parliament at the moment?
In that I am partaking in as much existential escapism as possible, yes.
Okay. This week, I think we're only going to be talking about Boris Johnson's decision to prorogue Parliament.
Yes.
We should probably begin, we'll do the thing with the break, but we should probably just begin in this intro explaining what does that actually mean.
Yeah, Jimmy, what does proroguing actually mean?
So, in a parliamentary session, it's always begun in the UK Westminster system by the government laying out its legislative programme in the form of a Queen's speech. So, The government writes it, and then the Queen reads out what the priorities are for the next legislative session for the sitting government. This is always preceded by what's known as proroguing, which is when Parliament is suspended in pretty much all of its activities.
Mm-hmm.
So the House of Commons doesn't sit, the House of Lords doesn't sit, committees don't sit.
Mm-hmm.
Which this makes it distinct from a recess, which we'll probably cover at some point.
Where stuff can still go on in the background.
So yeah, the committee stuff can still go on in the background in a recess, which is what happens when during conference season, for instance, which is around September, October time, most every year, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Boris Johnson decided to do this from the... I'm trying to remember the dates, actually. It's basically from the second week of September up until halfway
like
through
the
October.
Week before...
I think there's two weeks before the end of the end of October, which would cover the normal conference season, but is also longer than that. The upshot of it is that Parliament, assuming that Parliament did actually go to conference season, which I think is an assumption here, rather than something that's necessarily true, Parliament will lose like four sitting days.
Mm-hmm.
But if Parliament wasn't planning on going to conference season this year, and I think it would have very good reason not to do so,
mm-hmm.
Parliament loses many more days than that.
Mm-hmm.
It loses weeks of potential time where it could do something about Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
Slash
do anything, actually.
Or do anything else, but yeah, that's the only thing that they will do in this scenario. So we're going to be discussing why Boris Johnson did that, whether his motives mm-hmm. were entirely... good or bad.
wow, I wonder what we're going to think.
what the upshot of it is, what it means for the likelihood of a no-deal Brexit, of a deal Brexit, of a revocation, of an extension, of a hashtag people's referendum, as Jazz will no doubt say.
I've never been lower about the prospects of a people's vote, I'll be completely honest.
So this is some major shit that went down, and mm-hmm. we're going to be discussing it.
Yeah.
In some detail.
And of course, Jimmy is going to speak for the 52%.
Always.
Always.
For the moral and voting majority.
Yeah, all right, shut up. Let's beg you for some money and get on with it. As As you may have noticed, we don't have any sponsors on this podcast because, frankly, we're bad at organising. So we therefore rely on our wonderful, wonderful Patreon backers to be able to help us with stuff like web hosting fees and all of that kind of stuff, which racks up quite the bill.
It does.
Good. So
I can confirm.
If you would like to help support us and keep the podcast going, then please do check us out on Patreon. You can search for Right Dishonourable and Patreon.
Or you can go to patreon.com/Right Dishonourable.
Oh, direct URL. Very exciting, Jimmy.
Very exciting. We'd like to thank our current sponsors, David Warner, Emerson Sparks, Gemma Cumming, John O, Matt, and Ollie McGregor. Thank you very much for sending money to us.
Oh, you are so very kind, thank you. Okay, well, on with the show now. Very good. So, Jimmy, as our resident translator for the psyche of people who want Brexit, what is the motivation from Boris Johnson for the using of this prorogation? There are an awful lot of people who are now in cabinet, even those who were Remainers, including Michael Gove, for example, who ruled out something like prorogation as inappropriate for going forward and actually getting us to leave the European
Union. I think even Boris Johnson said even it was Boris, inappropriate during his leadership campaign, I think.
Why has it now come to this, and has anything changed for him to now be swayed to think that this is a good idea? Because there is a lot of the commentary has been like, oh, this is just a normal procedure that usually happens around this time of year. I don't know what you're talking about. It has nothing to do with Brexit. We're starting with the assumption that that's a load of bullshit, right? This is for Brexit.
I mean, yeah, that is untrue. I don't know. I don't know if Boris Johnson has said it in those terms.
Plenty of other people, plenty of the talking heads sent onto the television
show. Talking heads is slightly different. I'm not even sure the talking heads believe it, but it is untrue.
No, of course they don't.
You know, whether
Jacob Rees-Mogg may have been incredibly articulate on the Tibet Today programme, but he doesn't believe that this is nothing to do with Brexit.
Yeah, I mean, the leaks that happened a couple of weeks ago, where Dominic Cummings said we do whatever, and actually floated this idea of proroguing Parliament in the first place. They've made it pretty clear, I think, via those leaks, that they are willing to do whatever, including, I don't think this quite counts as breaking the rules, but it's certainly bending them in bad spirit, which, you know, the nicest thing you can say about it is it's unsporting.
But that's kind of like one of the there were suggestions that this was illegal, and it isn't. It is a normal part of parliamentary
process. Although I was listening to a podcast with Carl Gardner, who's an academic and expert in constitutional law, and he thought that the judicial reviews that are being mounted by various people, chiefly John Major and Gina Miller, alongside, I think, Joe Swinson and someone else, Tom Watson, that's it, Labour's deputy leader. Carl Gardner thought that there was a chance that those judicial reviews might actually come off, and that it might be ruled illegal, or outside of the rules.
Do you think that there's any because this is the thing, it's in bad faith. I feel like the case for it being illegal is pretty weak.
I'm pretty sure it was that he was talking about. I guess we'll see. You know, obviously, Gina Miller has actually won a previous court case around the process of Brexit.
I want to be her when I grow up, still.
So even though I have misgivings about her motives, she has actually won a court case, and presumably she thinks that this is, this is a goer. So there must be a chance. It must be a not completely stupid court case for her to have mounted it, I think.
And John Major as well, who obviously is a previous Conservative Prime Minister. What do you think of this as something that's possibly going to actually split the Conservative Party even more?
I think people that are opposed to No Deal Brexit, would be opposed whatever means are taken to actually put that into effect. I'm not necessarily sure that Boris Johnson is gunning for a No Deal Brexit, but the upshot of
this is the thing. I'm yet to be convinced that Boris Johnson actually wants there to be a No Deal Brexit. I cannot believe that. Say what you want about Yellowhammer, but those are pretty. Like I believe that those are all things that without proper. I mean, there isn't proper preparation, but that can very seriously happen.
So Yellowhammer was the government's Brexit forecast, no deal Brexit forecast.
That was leaked a couple of weeks ago, right?
Correct, yeah.
Which shows that there would be problems with supply chains for fresh food, for
medicine,
medication, and among many other things. I believe Yellowhammer is like authentic and real and isn't part of Project Fear or whatever.
One's disputing that there is a document that roughly describes what Yellowhammer describes.
Mm-hmm.
There's some dispute about where it dates from and how old
it's
it is.
It's August, apparently.
I've heard slightly different from people who should know.
Uh-huh. I have heard slightly different from people who should know. Philip Hammond?
Yeah.
Should probably know.
Well, there's some people say that the document actually goes back further than August,
mm-hmm.
although the version that was leaked
is from August.
Is from early August, is what I'm saying.
Sure. Mm. I am concerned about what is in Yellowhammer. I take it to not be something that has been unnecessarily inflated, because that doesn't feel like what civil servants actually do.
Well, there's a debate as to whether there are middling forecasts.
Sure. But I do not believe that Boris Johnson would allow for his legacy to be a no-deal Brexit.
I'm not convinced about that, because I think that there are people in his government there are some people in his government who I think want no-deal Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
I actually see it as the cleanest severance from, you know, between Britain and the
mm-hmm.
EU. And there's people that are certainly willing to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
Does Dominic Cummings want the withdrawal agreement? This is Boris Johnson's chief of staff and the former Vote Leave campaign chief. Does he want a no-deal Brexit, or does he want a withdrawal agreement, or does he not particularly care?
Mm-hmm.
I certainly believe that he's up for no deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are people within Boris Johnson's administration that do want no deal and are willing to go through with it. What he wants, I don't really know, to be honest with you.
That's what I'm still struggling with, because I still don't believe that a man of his arrogance and a man of his knowledge of history, I don't think that he would allow a no-deal deal to be his legacy. Who do you think the proroguing of Parliament is for? I've heard people suppose that it is a bargaining chip for getting some kind of change to the Irish backstop, which is the thing that he insists on needing to be changed with the withdrawal agreement.
Why would that affect the Irish backs? Why would that affect the negotiations?
Exactly.
Okay.
But I've heard people say that this
suggested.
Is...
Okay.
Yeah. Because they also do not want a no-deal Brexit on the European continent.
So the Irish backstop, just to remind me, is the thing that would keep us... the UK. Well, it would keep Northern Ireland specifically, but in the way the British government's interpreted it, it would keep the UK in a customs union with the EU.
Yeah,
it would
then depend on Northern Irish governance. So if there isn't then an agreed kind of like customs arrangement between or any infrastructure between Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, then it would keep Northern Ireland in a customs union with the Republic indefinitely.
Yeah.
And that is intolerable for the DUP, especially because that changes customs arrangements from Great Britain and Northern Ireland, which they do not want. They don't want Northern Ireland to be treated differently.
Yeah.
And also affects Britain's sovereignty in Northern Ireland, which is one of the problems that a lot of Brexiters have.
So
with conversations with European leaders that Boris Johnson has had, it was weirdly reported in the media, but Angela Merkel said that that Boris Johnson had 30 days to be able to come up with an alternative, which was seen as kind of like this great secession that she had. That's always been the case. The EU have put forward the current backstop arrangements as their solution to the potential problems that would exist between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And it has always been our prerogative to then come up with an alternative solution that might work better. Mm. That's the solution that the European Union have come
And the Irish backstop only comes in if we pass the withdrawal agreement, which then starts a 2-year transition period.
Yes.
And then provided we make no
And
other,
we love 2-year countdown clocks, we don't do. We?
Provided we didn't sort of come to any sort of longer, more comprehensive arrangement around the Irish border issue, that's when the Irish backstop comes into effect at the end of that the 2-year transition period.
Yes, right? Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know where we go with this, but I mean, to your bargaining chip point around mm-hmm. the Irish backstop, I just think that Boris Johnson's done this to limit his opponents in Parliament options for manoeuvre, basically. Mm-hmm. He's made it harder for them to do anything, mm-hmm. Whether they pass legislation to prevent a no-deal Brexit or to get an extension to our... what are we calling this now? Extension to our EU membership, I suppose, yeah. to give us more negotiating time. The Article 50 process is what I mean. It just makes it harder for them to do anything, or call a vote no confidence is the other obvious thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's that straightforward. I don't really see why you need to read anything more into it.
Why are people so angry about this?
Partly because if you are a Remain campaigner, which I guess you are to some degree, right? You went out and protest, so that makes you an activist.
If you want to inflate my role and call me a campaigner, then yeah, go for it.
It makes it more likely that we're going to leave mm-hmm. with or without a deal.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that's quite clever. It's moved the goalposts quite significantly towards no deal, which makes leaving with a deal more palatable.
Correct, yeah. I think that's a reasonable read of Boris Johnson's motives, you know, mm-hmm. notwithstanding we're not really sure whether he wants to leave. You don't think he wants to leave without a deal?
Yeah, I don't think
I'm
so.
I'm less certain about that. But it gives Parliament a week in the start of September, where Keir Starmer, the Labour...
It's the week that this comes out.
Yeah, yeah. Keir Starmer, the Labour Shadow Attorney General, has said that they are going to try and pass some legislation to prevent a no-deal Brexit. That is the opposition and anyone who... it's not being led by Jeremy Corbyn, actually. It's being led by various Remain-minded or, you know...
What is Jeremy Corbyn doing? Completely irrelevant to this conversation, but if... Anyway.
He's been irrelevant throughout the Brexit process, I think. And he was fairly irrelevant prior to, you know, during mm-hmm. the campaign as well.
Apart from the fact that he wants to be the Prime Minister of a potential... government of national unity, or as I like to call it, a GNU. Everybody loves GNU.
If you are a Remain-minded MP, you've got 1 week in September, which is the week coming up, and then you have 2 weeks at the end of October, which isn't much time at all, really.
Mm-hmm.
So it annoys them for that pure reason, but also, even though it is within the rules mm-hmm. to do what Boris Johnson has done. It's definitely, you know, foul play. It's definitely mm-hmm. unsporting. is the nicest way you can describe it.
Mm-hmm. Or an undermining of democracy, which is probably the other end of how you could describe it.
So why
do you think that it's an undermining? Do you think that claim that it's an undermining of democracy is a valid one?
No.
Why?
Well, why do you think it is?
I asked first.
But you're the one making the claim. I don't. You know, I can only respond to whatever arguments you're going to come up with.
So the problem that I think that we're probably going to leave the EU now. I think that the horse has now bolted way too fucking far and we're not going to get it back in the corral.
Okay.
I think that leaving the EU should be hard.
Okay.
It's something that is,
it has proven difficult.
It has proven difficult and it probably... Like Article 50 was two lines in a treaty that were never meant to be invoked at all.
I think the guy who wrote it, who I think is called Lord Kerr, uh-huh. Actually said recently that he intended it to be used by kind of autocratic Eastern European presidents and prime ministers who'd sort of mm-hmm. started like disobeying the rule of law.
Yeah, how wonderfully appropriate. Yeah. So... You end up with, a 2-year process of negotiating leaving the European Union is clearly unrealistic. And there have been so many promises made about us leaving within 2 years or by an October 31st deadline, where there really hasn't been enough time or strong enough governments to be able to actually do that properly. I do not see how there can be an interpretation unless you really wrangle kind of like your idea of what people vote for. I don't think there is any kind of a mandate for leaving the European Union with no deal. You can look at polling and you can see that it is more popular than I would expect it to be honest. It's more popular than leaving with Theresa May's deal, for example. But there is no point where a government has gone to people, or there has been a vote by people that says, I want to leave the European Union in this fashion.
Sure.
And
I should say, on the polling question, there's no particular, there's no majority for anything among the public.
No, yeah, right. Agreed. And this is, I get very frustrated by the fact that this is the idea of people versus the parliament.
Hmm.
Where it isn't. It very clearly isn't. It is a small number of people who are extremists, really, or who were extremists until very recently in the Conservative Party, who think that this is a good idea, and they're saying that they're representing and honouring the vote in 2016, whereas that is definitely a bending of the truth. There is truth there, but there is a bending of that truth. And I think that it would have been, I think taking out the check and balance to the executive in Parliament, where Parliament is the thing that passes laws in this country. It isn't the Prime Minister, it isn't the Queen, no matter what the processes are. Parliament is meant to be the supreme sovereign part of our democracy. And the deliberate bypassing of that, even though it's a prorogation, is something that is normal and happens regularly and happens like every year, usually under normal circumstances. The bypassing of that institution really does worry me, and it's kind of like the equivalent of Boris Johnson having an executive order, which is something that's used in presidencies.
To bypass Congress.
To bypass, the checks and balances that are meant to exist.
So I do have a response to that, and I think the difference in our views on this is really about how we view Parliament in all of this scenario. To sort of start at the beginning, I think Parliament chose to essentially subcontract the decision about our EU membership to the voting public.
Yeah.
And the only two options on that ballot paper were Leave or Remain. Both of those actually were somewhat ambiguous in that Leave, as you'll rightly point out, it didn't say what terms we'd leave and what the relationship would look like afterwards. Remain actually didn't give a particular instruction as to how closely we want to be integrated going forward, which I actually think is a major question.
Yeah, and if I'm being critical of that as well, there was a lot of Remain and Reform as being the mantra, the drum that was being beaten there.
Yeah.
What does Reform look like?
Yeah,
right. There are problems with that vote on both sides.
But so Parliament sent that question out, as we say, kind of an ambiguous question when you think about it. But given that Leave actually won that referendum, the decision about how we leave, then I think, and I don't think this is something I've always argued. I think I've actually, if you go back and listen to the episodes immediately after the vote, I think I thought that No Deal was actually a closer a closer interpretation of the result, which I now think is untrue. But the decision then passes back to Parliament as to how we leave, in what form that looks. And since then, Parliament has actually voted through the triggering Article 50, which started that 2-year countdown, which was then extended to 2.5 years. And the way that process works, and Parliament's been involved in every step of this, is that at the end of the 2.5 years, you leave without a deal unless you've agreed a deal previously. And Parliament has then chosen not to actually agree a deal on 3 separate occasions when the deal that Theresa May was negotiated, which I think realistically is the only deal available. Whoever could go, Jeremy Corbyn, Boris Johnson could go back and get some very minor changes to it, but it's going to be largely cosmetic, I think. The deal is the deal.
I really liked Dan Runciman's commentary that it was would be a warmed up deal, as if it's just going to be popped into the microwave a little bit.
Yeah. And then Parliament has decided not to authorise the withdrawal agreement, the deal. And the upshot of that is that if we reach the deadline, we leave without a deal.
Mm.
So effectively what has happened is Parliament has voted for the current state of affairs.
Mm-hmm. But Parliament has had the option up until now of kicking that can down the road through extensions. And it has... and there have been those extensions, and now that ability to extend has been taken away from Parliament.
Mm. What would be gained by another extension, exactly? We know what the options are at this stage. Why does Parliament need more time?
Either for a referendum, for more negotiation, or for an election.
I think negotiations are pointless. I think a general election is also pointless because it actually doesn't matter who's in power. Mm-hmm. The deal is going to look the same. A referendum, I guess you could call a referendum between...
You know what my option is, right?
You would prefer a freeway deal with preferential voting, which does kind of make sense, but does seem to...
A freeway deal with preferential voting is basically having no deal as a leaving option, a warmed-up version of Theresa May's deal as a leaving option, or remaining in the EU and then ranking your first and second preference.
Mm.
And then kind of knocking out the third. And
Assuming none gets the majority in the first round.
In the same way that the London mayoral elections are run.
I've always seen the second referendum as a way of getting Remain through the back door, to be honest.
I will be very happy for us to leave if that passes a referendum. I'm so sick of it. I just want it to end. I will then probably, obviously I'll have to kind of like reassess what going back into the European Union is. But the only way, there is deadlock. And the only way in my eyes of democratically and fairly going forward is by having that three-way choice. Because those are the only three options that are on the table that are actually going to happen and can be devoid of all of this. Or as devoid as possible of all of this rhetoric of hypothesising.
The thing is, all those three options, although they look quite categorical, in the long term are not really like that clear at all.
But I feel like it's not even about the long term anymore.
So I feel like,
it's about how we get over this one hill.
The deal is essentially, in some ways, it's actually a two-year extension of negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
It retains continuity around market access and a bunch of other things.
Migration. Yeah, but then leaving with no deal is the entering into a new unspecified set of negotiations.
Correct.
Presuming that we want to have any kind of trading relationship with the European Union.
I think, and then remain... if we were to remain at the end of all of this, it would not settle the question by any stretch. I think.
No, sure.
I think it would rightly be seen as illegitimate that essentially what had happened is Parliament had farmed this question out, got the wrong answer back, an answer it didn't want, fannied around for 3 years without really achieving anything, and then, contrived to actually end up with a deal that it didn't like, the no deal option.
But there is a deal that is accepted by people who do just want to leave the European Union without any of the bells and whistles of obligations or paying for things, and that is no deal.
Right.
And that speaks to them. Like, I feel like at the moment, at the very least, and I by no means think that this is set in stone, but the preference ranking is... Remain, no deal, the deal that's been negotiated. I can see no deal winning that. I think that a lot of the rhetoric of tell them again, a lot of the rhetoric of essentially what you have been saying will work, and it will be a very tight race between those two. But a people's vote just isn't on the table anymore. And you said, so I spoke at an event a couple of days ago with the Common Sense Network, and I started talking about, as a very excitable Liberal Democrat, started talking about the people's vote. Mm. And we were speaking with kind of like a load of young London kids, and I've never seen less enthusiasm for anything ever. There's no desire for it. I think that it is the fairest and the most democratic option going forward.
I'm not sure if I buy the fact that it's the most democratic or the fairest option. Just because the original premise of the referendum, we can talk about referendums in relation to the British Constitution, but was that the vote would be respected. On that £9 million leaflet that was sent round to everyone, it said, this is a decision for you.
Should have kept that leaflet if I'd known it was worth £9 million.
The result will be implemented. In the 2017 general election, Labour and the Tories campaigned basically on the premise of, well, this is the referendum result, we are going to implement it. And I just think it would be an incredible break with democracy to have another referendum with Remain on the ballot paper. I think you can make a case for having another referendum with only Deal or No Deal on the ballot paper.
I think we need to have an option. There needs to be a democratic event where everybody is allowed to have their option accepted or rejected. And can you imagine, like, there's protests at the moment with prorogation, can you imagine what a referendum without Remain on the ballot paper would look like? We are still a country that is split about 50-50. And I think you need to give those people a voice as well.
They had a chance to voice their opinions 3 years ago.
Yeah. But things have changed. And then cancelling 50% of the population's option.
I actually don't think
anything
significant really has changed.
Yeah, there are concrete ways that we know what leaving looks like now.
I mean, I guess we do, but like, you could have inferred quite a lot of it prior to the first referendum, I think. I mean,
I don't believe you believe that.
Yeah, a lot of this was said before, is that actually when we go into negotiations, we won't have all the cards. I know that there's a lot of, like, vote leave bluster around this.
Yeah, that's what my lot said.
Yeah.
And the people who are now in charge were like, oh no, it's going to be the easiest trade deal ever made. You know that?
Yeah, that's true. But, like, as I say, you could have inferred quite a lot of this in the last referendum. I mean, a lot of it is kind of obvious, I think. You know, I thought it would be difficult because at the end of the day, you have a trading block of, 450 million people when you exclude the UK. That might be the population for Europe, actually. But, you know, whatever.
I think it is.
Hundreds of millions of people versus 65 million. And all of the financials that go alongside that. And then, you have an understanding of the EU that is actually pretty inflexible when it comes to defending its own interests and its own dogmas. I think it was fairly obvious how this was going to go down.
Well, maybe you should have made a Jazza-like prediction.
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, well.
But, I mean, everyone was already saying that. So
a
lot of people were saying that anyway.
You're very bad at doing this.
Okay.
But how do you personally feel about the proroguing of Parliament and then potentially leaving without a deal?
I think the proroguing is a shitty thing to do. On the other hand,
it's not something you would protest against.
No, as a Leave voter, endured is probably putting it a bit too strongly, but I've seen any number of the parliamentary shenanigans are sort of recent from the Remain side. Stuff like trying to gain control of the order paper, which sort of means being able to legislate how you want and is usually in the gift of the government. John Bercow's behaviour, the Speaker of the Commons, has been terrible. All of the court cases as well, the huge attempts to actually undermine the referendum via the courts, the intellectual attempts to undermine the legitimacy of the referendum and people's votes and people's right not to be governed by the EU, I think has been disgraceful. And at the end of all this, I do think that
that is the intent. But actually, what all of those kind of steps have done is ensured that Parliament has had a really hands-on role in the decisions made around leaving the European Union or otherwise. What Gina Miller's case has done. That's what John Bercow's treatment of the House of Commons has done. It has reinvigorated a hung parliament's role. And that is ultimately what voting to leave the European Union was about.
No, that's actually wrong. This whole thing about, we want to reclaim our parliamentary sovereignty mm-hmm. was a rhetorical flourish that I think was massively overused by the Vote Leave campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the entire point of holding a referendum was to undermine parliamentary sovereignty, because it took away the decision from Parliament and gave it to the public, mm-hmm. right? And the public gave their instruction back to Parliament, and Parliament, not all of Parliament, but a hefty section of Parliament has been trying very, very hard to ignore mm-hmm. that instruction mm-hmm. in various ways.
But that Parliament has a mandate that is more recent than the referendum result.
Not really. I mean, a lot of them did campaign on manifestos, you know, 80% mm-hmm. campaigned on manifestos to implement the result.
None of them campaigned on a manifesto to leave without having a deal with the European Union going forward. None of them.
There will inevitably be some sort of arrangement between Britain and the EU, what it looks like, you know. But, you know, at this point, I look at Parliament and, you know, the activities of people like Gina Miller, and mm-hmm. I look at the proroguing, and I think, well, you know, fuck you at the end of the day. If mm-hmm. you're going to behave badly for 3 years, and then, you know, the government of the day decides to fuck you over, using actually a legal constitutional procedure, seemingly, mm-hmm. Allowing for whatever that judicial review comes out with, I think it's bad, but I don't care mm-hmm. at the end of the day. And that's why I wasn't out there on Wednesday protesting, because I think it's just desserts.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Eye for an eye. We all go blind, Jimmy.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen next?
So it is really a question of what Boris Johnson... We're assuming the proroguing is going to go ahead mm-hmm. at this point, because although I suppose it doesn't really make that much difference, what will happen is that... Boris Johnson will either try to use, via brinkmanship, walk us up to the deadline on October 31st, where we are due to leave without a deal by automatic operation of the law. He will either do that so that he can get a withdrawal agreement or his version of that through, and therefore we would leave with a deal. Or he will just go straight for no deal, which seems to be more Dominic Cummings' plan,
mm-hmm.
And use every single method of like parliamentary shenanigans in order to make it hard for their opponents, who this is like Keir Starmer and co, who will do the opposite, who will try and get as much time as they can, and they will try and legislate. It seems like the government of national unity option is slightly off the table at this point.
I don't think necessarily. It depends on how a potential vote of no confidence goes. Because then Boris Johnson has a chance to form a government again, and then it depends what the rest of Parliament ends up deciding.
Well, the vote of no confidence, Boris Johnson has said, if there is a vote of no confidence, I will just schedule a general election for after October 31st.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some dispute as to how legal that is, and how, you know, whether he's allowed to do that, and the rules around that are a bit up in the air, particularly because of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act has created certain ambiguities in that area. There seems to be a consensus among people who are interested in the Constitution and who are Remainers in my Twitter feed that the legislation option is a more sensible one anyway. Mm-hmm. And Keir Starmer has confirmed today that that's the route that they're looking to go down at this point. And then you have the other problem with, like, forming a government of national unity is Jeremy Corbyn's potential leadership of that, which mm-hmm. Joe Swinson of the Lib Dems wouldn't support, and would be very divisive.
I'm still available, Joe. Still available.
So I think the legislation option is their best bet at this point. If they want to stop a no-deal Brexit or stop Brexit full stop, I think that's the Remain parliamentarians' best option.
Stopping no deal, the easiest way for them to stop no deal, sincerely, is to vote for the warmed up deal, right?
That may be what Boris Johnson's hoping for.
I think that's what he's hoping for as well.
So, I mean, yeah, that was, you know, when these votes were going through, this has always been the best option to stop no deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons that these claims that what they want is a deal rather than no deal sort of ring a little bit hollow in some people's cases, because you kind of say, well, if you were that bothered, you could have done more to actually stop it by voting for the withdrawal agreement.
I have an interesting question for you. The whole thing of you're not actually, I mean, actually, you kind of did say that this just now. Like, you lost Get Over It, essentially, for kind of like people who want to still remain in the European Union.
I don't, I mean,
respect the result, right?
Yeah, respect the result. Get Over It sort of implies that I want you to change your opinion. I think it's fine your opinion remains the same.
Yeah. But oh, you
should accept that you lost the votes.
Why? People in this country have lost votes. Lots. More people, actually, every time we have a general election, more people lose the vote, quote-unquote, than win it, because never more than kind of between 30 and 40% of the people vote for the majority government, usually. What do you think it is about... And also, like, when we look at the Scottish referendum as well, people kind of, like, got on with it. Like, obviously, there's a drumbeat from the Scottish National Party now to change things, but that's because circumstances have changed for them in their eyes. What do you think it is about this particular vote that has animated people who voted to Remain or have changed their mind and think that they should now, that they would now vote Remain? What do you think has animated them to such an extent? Why do you think they see it as so unjust and something worth disrupting?
Because I think a lot of the Remainists, which is what the Guardian long-running article about around this called them, are you people who, some of whom were not very political before this, before the EU referendum, have their main focal point politically is to actually keep Britain in the EU. And they, I mean, I think they feel it's unjust because it's actually quite a good play. You know, they're upset that their side actually looks quite likely to lose at this point. And everything else is, you know, post hoc justification or rationalisation.
But why is it this one that's got people so riled up?
I mean, they've been upset for ages. So this one is actually just... I think because it looks as though it's going to get Brexit over the line. Whereas actually...
No, I mean the referendum.
Oh.
So for like this in particular, why has there been a movement that has been generated around... still wanting to remain in the European Union?
That's a much more interesting question.
Thank you. I thought so.
Sorry. That's misinterpreting you. I think it's, for some reason, and it might partly be in... I mean, just throughout history, every so often, societies go from being relatively settled as far as politics go. So you'd think of, like, the Blair era as quite a stable time, actually, compared to the Thatcher era, which was very divisive. Even Cameron, until the referendum, actually...
Oh, the halcyon days of the coalition government.
Was right. I mean, you know, bearing in mind there'd been the huge financial crisis, was actually... It seemed like a very stable time, certainly compared to now. Every so often, there seems to me to just be an explosion of division. Doesn't really work as a metaphor, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like every, you know, you go from periods of stability where actually society doesn't feel particularly political, to periods where it is actually very divided, and we are just, you know, why that is, I don't really know. It's a sort of cyclical thing, I think. And that's why you have, I mean, at this point, we do have like almost like a classic Civil War scenario, where you have two sides of extremists who are just pushing the country closer and closer and closer to the brink.
Mm-hmm.
Most people actually probably not that interested even, but it just, you know, it just so happens that this question, I think because it's at the confluence of actually what sort of society you want to live in to some degree. You know, with the metropolitan, they would call themselves liberals, but I think I see them as more progressives. Cosmopolitans, internationalists, global corporation, sugar spies, everything nice. And then you have, you know, the nativists on the other side, or, you know, put more nicely, people who still think that national sovereignty and nation states have a significant role to play, have the significant role to play in the future of governance. I think it is partly a culture thing. I think that element, that's what ignites people, I think, far more than economics at this stage.
Why do you think that this fallout was different to that of the Scottish referendum, for example, in 2014?
Because it didn't seem as divided across those lines. I mean, obviously, there was a strain of... I mean, the thing is, like, wasn't actually that close to the Scottish referendums. I'm probably the wrong person to ask this, mm-hmm. but it didn't seem as much a question of what sort of are you... It didn't seem as much of an open-closed sort of question as it's usually put, which I think is slightly mistaken, but, you know, does have a grain of truth there. It wasn't a case of, like, for Scotland, they were either going to engage with the outside world directly through the vehicle of the EU or via Westminster into mm-hmm. the EU. Those were pretty much the two options, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it wasn't suggested that they wanted to massively change things, really. They just wanted to sever that connection to Westminster.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that is built inevitably on anti-English feeling, and that was a vein that you actually did see erupt occasionally in the Scottish referendum campaign. But to note, I mean, you know, I get it was a less significant question, I think. They still wanted to be governed by foreigners. They were just disputing which foreigners would be doing the governing.
Mm-hmm.
Something
I hear a lot from people on my side is the what you've been calling unsportsmanlike behaviour from the election, the referendum itself to now.
Are you talking about vote leave?
Vote leave, and then into kind of more broad. I mean, like the people who then spun out of vote leave, so like Brexit Party and all that kind of side of things. Dominic Cummings, who's now the advisor to the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
And I think it's the idea that this is something that cannot be reversed. It's because the consensus, to answer my own question, the reason that Scotland didn't then have kind of like this same pushback is because the status quo won there.
Whereas
Brexit happens and you never go back to how our relationship was with the EU. Frankly, our relationship now, never, even if we were to remain now, our relationship, were we to stay a member of the European Union, would still never be the same. I would call it damage, and I do think it's damage. That damage has now been done.
Yes.
Our position on the world stage, that damage has now been done. And it is that fear of... It was talked about in that Guardian long read about Remainists, where they thought they lived in a particular type of country, and that has been put hugely under threat, and they do not like the option that is being put forward by those that are in power and running the show in the government now. I think it's desperation to cling on to something that some nostalgia of maybe Blair years, maybe some kind of consensus politics. Well, see actually also more now than ever that is now past. The place of Britain in the world, not just Europe, has now changed, and the way that people see us has now changed irreparably. It's quite exciting because we have no idea what's coming forward, but I still think it's a bit shit.
See, I think that I think you're right that Remainists did think they lived in something, a particular version of Britain. And the problem wasn't really the referendum, actually. The problem was that they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They were mistaken about the sort of country that they lived in. I'm sure that there are some Remainists or some people who are sympathetic to it who have also drawn that conclusion, have thought the problem isn't really the referendum vote or whether we leave or stay at this point. The problem is that I was wrong. And I misread the situation. The hope among some...
No, I think... So, I think it comes from a position of actually... despite how pro-EU people are framed very often, it comes from an intensely patriotic place. At least it does for me. And I think it does for a lot of people that I know who are of the same ilk. Where it was... There was this great romantic idea of what Britain had become post-World War II. That actually there was, we were kind of like leading part of the leaders of our continent, and internationalist and outward looking and cooperative.
Well, for some reason, and the 2012 Olympic Games opening ceremony is often held up as the great symbol of that view of things.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I mean, actually, Britain is, if you look at the polling around things like immigration, in fact, concern about immigration has diminished significantly since the, or has continued to diminish since the EU referendum. Mm-hmm. In many ways, we are like people.
Yeah, that's something I find curious.
People complain about.
But is that because they're not really talking about immigration anymore, and it's because that's not what's in the media?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, you can always criticise these surveys for that sort of thing. But in many ways, Britain is just as tolerant a country as it was 10 years ago. By some metrics, it's actually more tolerant in terms of LGBT rights and attitudes.
Yeah, but what about what we're actually going to do with? When we end freedom of movement, we're sending a lot of people back. We are the settlement scheme that has been rolled out. They may be cawing about how well it works, but there are so many examples of ways that it hasn't.
We're not working. Yeah. But in terms of how the general attitudes, it doesn't seem the case that we have suddenly become a very closed society in that sense.
No.
Despite what I just said about Remainers, you know, Remainers misreading their country. I think they did in many ways, but in some ways they probably were correct about the sort of country they were living in.
Mm.
This is one of the weird things to me, is that actually I think I interpreted the referendum result very narrowly in the case of, like, do you want to be governed by Brussels or not? But the way it was covered in the media and the way it's been interpreted since has had almost nothing to do with that. Really?
Yeah.
It's been culture wars and what's your view of foreigners and, you know, all of those sort of questions, really. So.
If only we'd had clarity in 2016, could have all been... It's all David Cameron's fault. Anyway, it is.
I think that the, successive prime ministers, this is quite generous of Cameron, but successive prime ministers have essentially been passing the parcel that contained an unexploded bomb in it, and Cameron was the unfortunate sod who set it off.
Yeah. Twat.
Yeah.
Shall we finish?
I think we can finish.
Okay, cool. You can follow us at Right Dishonour, where the podcast exists. And you can find me at Jazza John. If you want to rock backwards and forwards collectively in the next few weeks as shit hits proverbial fans. And you can find Jimmy at JDE Nichols and continue to blame him.
Me personally, I'm the one responsible for this.
I mean, who else can we...
Tom Harwood, I mean, he was part of the Vote Leave campaign.
We went a whole episode without mentioning Tom fucking Harwood, and you've just ruined it.
I think it's important to keep bringing him up, just as an example of how the media in this country operates.
Mm-hmm. Great. Excellent. Thank you very much for listening. See you soon.